Welcome to Southern Hospitality. I'm Elizabeth Gordon.
And I'm Dana Barrett.
And we are glad that you tuned into Business Radio X to find out more about all of the hottest spots here in the ATL. Joining us this morning is Bob Amick, who is the owner and founder of Concentric Restaurants. Concentric's Restaurants, plural there. And Bob, you own restaurants that are really in the category of like the Atlanta classics. I mean, when people talk about what are the best restaurants here in the city, they talk about restaurants like One Midtown Kitchen, Two Urban Licks, Parrish is a huge favorite of mine.
Me
and
too.
The Spence just opened up not
6 weeks ago.
So I want to hear all about everything as well as...
I know, do we have like 4 hours to spend with you?
I'm so thrilled we
As long
you.
As you feed me.
No, wait a minute. You're supposed to feed us. Wait a minute. Hold on. You're the one with all the good food.
There you go.
So now how did you get started in the restaurant business in the early days? Because you've been at it for a while now.
I've been at it all my life. So I've been in the restaurant business in Atlanta since 1968, actually, when I came to go to college here.
But, so were you the only one in Atlanta at that time? Just you?
It was a pretty small town back then. But I came from New York to go to college at Oglethorpe University here in Atlanta and worked my way through college in restaurants around town.
Interesting.
Opened the 590 West Peachtree was originally a Stouffer's Hotel. Opened that hotel, worked for Stouffer's for a couple of years, but met my future partner with the Peasant Restaurants at Stouffer's, Steve Nygren. And spent 20-some years together as partners, you know, developing the Peasant Restaurants back in the 70s, 80s, mix restaurants.
And, oh, yeah.
Sold the company in 1989, stayed on under contract and ran the public company out of New York for 5 years, and then left and did a couple other ventures, but started Concentrics back in 2002. I think we were the first, when we opened One Midtown Kitchen, we were the first major restaurant to open after 9/11, in downtown. And so I built about 100 restaurants and, probably built more restaurants in Atlanta than anybody.
So was there ever a time in that when you sort of were closing down one thing, selling it, or, you know, shifting things around when you thought, okay, I'm done, I'm not going to do this anymore? Or did you just have the buzz and always have to keep going?
You know, when we sold the Peasant and when I left after 20 some years, that was probably the most defining moment, which is, you know, I'm all of a sudden I'm in my late 40s, and what am I going to do with the rest of my life? And
right.
And that was a struggle in terms of, do I want to start all over again? Do I want to go run a big company for somebody else? I actually interviewed with Disney.
Oh, wow.
And I actually came very close to moving to Santa Monica and running Wolfgang Puck's Food Empire at the time.
Wow.
And last minute pulled out of it, decided to stay in Atlanta and start over again.
Do
and
your
so,
own thing.
It just one of those deals.
And clearly you know what you're doing. Because you're like Midas,
no,
right? All these restaurants.
Nobody bats 1,000. I've had my mistakes as well. Too,
well, so. I'm sure, but you've got some really great credentials restaurant wise.
So, what's unique about the restaurant industry here in Atlanta, and as you've moved into other cities, seen the difference?
I mean, Atlanta's been a solid restaurant town for quite a few years. I think we're lucky enough to have great chef entrepreneurs, chef owners. That have always kept, I think if you look around the country and you look at restaurants and what cities are good restaurant towns and what ones aren't, it's always the cities that have great local talent that drive it. When you don't have that, then you have the fill-in, you have the change, you have the people that come in from the outside, and you don't have great local restaurants. And so you look at Boston, you look at New York, you look at L.A., you look at San Francisco, you look at New Orleans, you look at Chicago. Those are all Philadelphia now. They're great towns because they've got that great foundation there. And I think Atlanta has been lucky enough to have that. I think that combination, along with the thriving convention business has been here for a long time.
Yeah.
We've always been disproportionately had more restaurants than we should have.
Yeah.
And it's always been that convention business and the hotel rooms that have fed that. That makes a Monday or a Tuesday night, sometimes a Saturday night.
Yeah.
That has sort of driven that. And I think, you know, if you look at the restaurants inside the perimeter and outside the perimeter, there's a big difference in terms of how restaurants operate. And I'm an in-town restaurant guy. I develop city restaurants, and whether I'm developing in Atlanta or other major cities, they're usually always in downtown, thriving areas. I think you can play a little bit more. It's less vanilla And you can experiment. And I think you have people that are willing to come in and try new things and try different things. And I think the farther you get away from that central business district, the more careful you have to be, because the people that are dining with you are more careful.
Yeah. I think we've all had some interesting restaurant experiences in our lives. And I will say this. I think I've been in Atlanta not as long as you, but for a while now. I'm officially a native, I think, since the late 80s. And I am spoiled here, I think, because, I mean, I also grew up in the Northeast in a pretty good restaurant town, although times were very different, obviously. But when I travel now sometimes to a city that is not a good restaurant city, I'm always so like wrinkling my nose and
Are your restaurants?
I know. Like you go to what they say, oh, we're going to take you to our best restaurant. And you go in and it's awful. And you're going like, I got to go home.
Applebee's.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're like, wait a minute. This is not what
So you're a food snob.
A little bit, I think.
I'm becoming more so now that we're doing this show. Because
I know.
I laugh all the time because I have people come in the restaurants now that introduce themselves to me and they go, I'm a foodie. And
yeah.
I want to look at them and go, that's not always a good thing.
Yeah,
you know, it's like you got to be a little bit leery when somebody says that to you.
You know, it's funny because I don't think of myself as a food snob in the sense that, like, I would always say, you know, when there's certain people that will, for example, only eat certain pizza, like this pizza's not good enough. I'm like, I can eat Elio's pizza from the freezer and I'll be happy. It's fine. But I can tell the difference.
Uh-huh.
You know, yep. I get that there's a difference. And I think what's so great about Atlanta, and obviously you've been a large part of this, is just that there's so much to choose from. So I can go get my junky whatever, you know, chain food something when I just need a quick whatever. But then when I want to go out to a nice dinner, I have so many choices.
Well, dining's become is entertainment.
It is.
And in Atlanta, even more so.
Yeah.
Because Atlanta doesn't have water. It doesn't
have
streams. We
don't have a lot of that
So, you know, when you go to Atlanta, you go, well, what do you do? You eat.
And you drink, and then you eat some more.
So, I mean, you only go down to Chattahoochee so many times, you go to Chastain Park and sweat at night. And,
that's right.
And so, it, you know, dining is eating out. It's entertainment. It's whether you're going to the theater, you're going to a movie, or you're going to eat, it's part of your entertainment budget to go out. And so dining's become more theater too. It's an experience. It certainly is always going to be about the food and the food first.
Yeah.
But it's the total experience in terms of, you know, ambiance and service and that energy. I think that's the fun of doing restaurants in town and those type of markets, because I think you can do a little bit more than that. People always complain to me about my restaurants being noisy. But they're also noisy for a reason to a certain degree. It's that energy. It's that, you know, open kitchens and busy bars and busy rooms. You know,
dining is not a library.
No. It's you know, it's people watching. It's eating. It's sharing. It's breaking bread. It's social.
What's funny, we were out of town a couple of weeks ago, and we were walking down a street in a town, a little beach town that we weren't really familiar with, and we were looking for a place to eat. And when you look into a place or you walk into a place and it's quiet or empty-ish, you think like, oh, this must not be very good. Even if it's an off time of day or whatever, even though you know you shouldn't really think that way, you go like, well, there's not, this is so, I think in a way you're right, that buzz makes you walk in and think, oh, this is popular, everybody's here, I need to be here.
No, and it's and when you go to the smaller markets, you don't know, it's unusual to see that. But also I think you don't have that thriving, you know, even when you have an accessible restaurant in a small town, it isn't the same. It isn't that thriving, bustling, you know, and people aren't used to that. And I mean, you know, I still get people that come in. We just opened the Spend 6 weeks ago, and you know, you can look and you can sort of tell who's going to like it, who's not going to like it, just by body language. And you know, is that our customer or is it not our customer? And we certainly, you can't cater to everybody when you're in the restaurant business, but you certainly have a target market in terms of who you're going after, and it's fun to watch. Anytime you build anything, to watch people come and react to what you've done, and whether that's positive or negative, and to anticipate that's, you know, it's painful sometimes, but it's part of the joy.
Well, it's funny. I want to talk about the Spence a little bit, since that is your newest venture, and I want to kind of hear about the concept and how it's going over there. But before we do that, I do want to ask you about that, because people often, when something new opens, right, everybody goes, whether it's their thing or not, because they don't really know what it is. They just, oh, there's a buzz around that corner over there. Let's go check it out. And so there's a new place that just opened in Buckhead called Twin Peaks. And I'm not
such
really
a clever name.
I'm not. Yeah. Well, it took me a minute to understand what they meant by Twin Peaks. Mm-hmm. But let's say that it has a similar meaning to the bar called Hooters.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really get that at first when I saw them building it. And I just was sort of like, what is that? What's going on? And then, of course, it came to light what it was. And one of my girlfriends said, well, I drove by and, you know, I saw the people going in there and they, you know, didn't look like the kind of crowd you would think would be interested in that. And I thought, well, I wonder if that's just a bunch of people who didn't really know what they were getting into until they walked in the door and they they were there one time, but they'll probably never go back because it's not their thing. So do you find that that happens when you open someplace new, that people just, the first group of people sort of are just checking it out?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're always going to get some of that. Buzz is a great thing on the front end. You want that buzz. You know, the days of advertising are long gone, all that social media in terms of what it does and how it drives people. I think people come to look and make decisions for themselves. You know, I don't think it's necessarily herding cattle.
Yeah.
You know, it gets people in. I mean, I tell everybody, every time we open a restaurant, we will be busy because of who we are. Whether we get them back is the job we do, and how well we execute. And,
yeah.
And you know, definitely some people wander in. And those kind of thematic concepts like that, yeah, I mean, people figure those things out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Why they're coming there and doing that. But you want to make everybody happy, but you can't. You know, if you get an elderly couple coming in and noise is a problem for them, you know, we may not be the place. And you know, I tell everybody it's a generational thing, and that's tough coming from me because I've been at it a long time and I'm at that generation now. But it's just fun to watch, and fun to watch how people respond. And you can't, you know, just as restaurant critics, you can't judge everybody in the same way.
Yeah.
You can't lump everybody in a pot and say, hey, we're going to judge everybody in this core values. What you really judge people on is, what are you trying to accomplish? What are you trying to do? And how well do you do at it?
Yeah.
So with Twin Peaks or anybody like that, if what they're accomplishing is, you know, what they want to do and they're doing it well for what it is,
great.
Bravo.
Totally.
You know, it's commerce, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think sometimes the food industry wants to take commerce out of it.
Yeah.
And wants to make it the love of art.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's about that dusty green bean that came out of the backyard. And look how pretty this green bean is. And
right.
How wonderful this is going to be tonight, because I just picked it 15 minutes ago.
Right.
You know, that's a little bit ballyhoo as well. And,
yeah.
And I think at the end of the day, it's really all about putting out great food. And great food's put out with great ingredients.
Yeah.
And with great talent. The combination
yeah.
above. So.
Well, Elizabeth, I can see you want to talk, and I'm hogging the
well,
conversation.
Well, Bob has the formula down, obviously, because you've done it again and again, and it's not just replicating the same concept each time. It's taking a daring new risk, trying new things, creating a totally original concept. So is there – because I know you do consulting now mm-hmm. as well for other mm-hmm. people starting restaurants. So do you have like a formula that you use? Because there's an element of formula, but there's also this huge element of originality and, you know, innovation.
Well, I mean, you know, a good movie, you know, there's a director behind that. You know, good theater is good theater. Certainly restaurants, the guts of what you believe in, you know, from a hospitality standpoint or from a design standpoint or from a quality of food standpoint, you know, whether you're in the burger business and you're putting out a great burger, or whether you're in a high-end restaurant putting out unbelievable foie gras, you know, you should get equal attributes for that, for doing well what you're committing to doing. And so we do one-of-a-kind restaurants. We do chef-driven restaurants. And we really develop our restaurants around our chefs and the talents they have, and then the physical plants that we have in buildings, because buildings sort of speak to you. And so you take a building, you don't force-feed something. Most of the time, I don't have a concept in my head that I'm looking for a space for. I really am looking to do a new restaurant. I've got lots of ideas. I look at the space, see what the space does, and then you put talent and space together and you create concepts. And so it's always new. It's always different. And it starts, you know, you may start over here at point A thinking you're going to get to Z this way, and it's a journey. And you may end up being totally different from, you know, a year later from where you thought you were going to be.
Yeah.
Because the creative process, if you leave it open and you don't box yourself in, you know, too many people say, well, I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do that. And what happens is the more boxes you put around yourself, the less creative you are. And so the more wide open you are, the more creative you are, you get better ideas. You can always pull back if you can't execute or do some of those. But you should never prohibit yourself from thinking big. And
yeah.
So we look at every concept, and whether I'm doing restaurants for myself or, you know, I've done hotels in Chicago and I've done stuff in St. Louis and I've got restaurants in Orlando and I've done restaurants all over the U.S., it's always a new adventure. It's always, wow, what do I know about it? Getting to know the market, getting to know the food industry. When I did Chicago, it was like, you know, early on, the critics called me before I ever opened the hotel and said, well, what does a Southern guy know about Italian cooking in Chicago? And I said, well, you just have to wait and see. That restaurant was Cibo Amato, and it actually was a finalist for a James Beard Award for Best New Restaurant in America.
So take that.
Yeah, so take that. And that was a consulting job.
Yeah.
We created it. We developed the concept. We developed hired the chefs, developed the menu, and ran the business. And so you look at whether it's my money or somebody else's money, we always approach it the same way, which is, you know, it's us. It's our name on the line, and we want it to be the best it can be. And so we've been fortunate enough to be able to play in Atlanta, but we're also fortunate enough to have people calling saying, hey, we'd like a little of that going on where we are. Can you come help?
Absolutely. Yeah, you've developed quite a reputation nationally now as experts in these innovative restaurant concepts. How do you get these new ideas? It seems like I would run out of ideas. I do not have the creativity to...
I tell everybody.
So many different restaurants.
I tell everybody it's the drugs I did in the 60s. No.
Nice. Nice.
Can I say that on radio?
Yeah, absolutely. Totally.
Definitely on our station.
No, I'm just one of those, my mind dreams.
Yeah, but you know what makes you different, I think? Because I've always said I'm a really good at ideas, but I'm not so good at execution, and you clearly have both. So that's really a unique combination. I think a lot of people have great ideas, and there's a lot of people who can execute who are very organized and methodical, but they have no creativity. So it's a really cool to have both. But on that note, tell us about the Spence. Like, what is the concept? How do people find it? Where is it?
Sure.
Give us the whole scoop.
The Spence has been open about 6 weeks, and it's a partnership with Richard Blaze, who was the Top Chef All-Stars winner last year.
Yep.
Some people refer to him as Atlanta's most famous chef, but he's, you know, certainly in and out of Atlanta on a regular basis, spends a lot of time on. He's got a cookbook coming out. We actually did Bravo filmed the opening of the Spence. It's going to air in September, and it was really around a show called Life After Top Chef, following Richard around. And so it's a partner. It's a very small, you know, what I call it. It's a big city neighborhood restaurant. It's only 4,000 square feet. And the Spence in Old English means to dispense from larder or pantry. So it's really Richard's pantry. And the symbol or the iconic symbol with the Spence is a key.
Right.
And the key is the key to the pantry.
Gotcha.
And so when you come in, it's really very homey. The kitchen's very open, and there's a pantry around the kitchens, but shelves so you can see all the food stuff. And the bar is the same way. There's no belly-up bar. There's just a wet bar like it would be in your home.
Oh, cool.
With communal tables around it. So it's very communal. It's very, very small, high energy, very American, incredible flavors, incredible layering. And it's been jamming. We just opened for lunch yesterday.
First day.
But it's been very well received. We're going to get, I think all the reviews are coming out here in the next few weeks, and it's going to be interesting because I think Richard and I together and we've worked together before.
I was going to ask how you two connected.
Richard's wife used to be a manager for mine. Richard also was the chef at One Midtown Kitchen for a while.
Gotcha.
In an earlier life. And so we have a great reputation, great rapport. We're both a little bit controversial. That makes it sort of interesting, puts us a little bit on edge, and we're ready for that. But that's part of the challenge as well. It's a very, very different restaurant. There's nothing like it in town. It's not farm to table. It's, you know, it's American. It's not Southern. It's just great food done with great ingredients, very accessible. The number one seller on the menu is bone marrow, believe it or not. But the bone marrow is topped with tuna tartare and quail eggs.
Wow.
And the number two seller on the menu is what we call the Juicy Lucy, which is a hamburger.
Wow.
But it's a special blend that we've been in-house, and it's a pretty damn good hamburger.
Sounds like it. So, now, it's on 5th.
It's the old, you know, remember Globe?
Vaguely.
Anyway, it's right there at Technology Square.
Okay.
At Tech. And,
yep.
Ground floor. And we shrunk the restaurant from 6,000 square feet to 4,000. Totally redid it. Bill Johnson did the restaurant. Johnson Studio, and it's only seats about 130 inside, and have a large patio outside, which we haven't opened in the seat yet.
Yeah, it's too
hot. I think it's going to come a little bit later.
Yeah.
But easy to get to, complimentary parking. Richard's there. When he's in town, he's there. It's fun to watch, and the amount of people that want their pictures taken, and the way that whole thing works. But,
nice.
You know, he's a terrific partner, and it's been you always love your newest baby.
Yeah.
I think we've done this one right, and I think it's going to be interesting for Atlanta.
It's an interesting location, and it makes me sort of think about locations in general as it relates to restaurants. I know certainly I was in retail for a while, and I know for both restaurants and retail, they say, you know, the most important thing is location, location, and location. So, and I find it interesting, I don't know if you, I'm sure you've both noticed this from time to time, there are certain locations where nothing seems to work. And something will come in and it will be there for a year or two and then it will go away. And then something else will come in. Everyone will get all excited and it will be there and it will go away after a year or two or 6 months or whatever. Do you think there's some locations that are just cursed? I mean, because they seem like they're, you know, right in the middle of the, like in Midtown at 10th and Peachtree or whatever. I feel like there's a spot there that just nothing can ever work there.
Well, the space I went into at the Spence has been vacant for 3 years, and everybody said it was cursed and don't go there. So
we'll see what happens.
Yeah, you know, listen, I think you're right about location, but, you know, location also has a lot to do with traffic,
yep,
visibility, spontaneity.
Yeah.
Restaurants, and particularly chef-driven restaurants, are destination-driven.
Yes.
And we don't – I mean, I certainly didn't put the Spence where I put it to live off of Georgia Tech. That's not what's going to happen to be there.
Right.
But it just happens to be a great space. It's easy to get to. It's got parking.
Right.
And I think people will come. I think that snake pit spaces often have to do with snake pit owners. I think if you do things well, people will come. Look at some of the locations I have restaurants in.
Yeah.
Two Urban Licks. There's no street address. It's a warehouse in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, they say nobody goes there because they can't find it. Well, it's, you know, Two Urban Licks is probably the busiest dinner restaurant in the city of Atlanta. One Midtown Kitchen's on a dead end street that you would never, ever go down.
Yeah, both of those, as you're approaching, you're thinking,
Am I going the right way?
And then you walk in, and it's,
so, you know, you have to, you know, if you really go out of the way like those, you better wow them when they get there. They need to immediately feel comfortable when they pull up and walk in that door and go, oh, you know, there's that sense of relief.
Yeah.
Like, from where am I going and being nervous? But places like where we're doing the Spence, it's had a couple failed restaurants. But I think if you do anything well, people will come and find it. And, you know, Atlanta loves, any city does, loves to find that off the beaten path, new jewel. So I don't worry about that.
Yeah.
You know, if we fail, we'll fail because of ourselves, not because of the location.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Now, Bob, I would also think that people is a big part of the continuation of the success. I mean, obviously, you wouldn't be able to do all that you've done if you didn't also have the ability to empower other people around you to kind of keep the ball rolling as you're on to the next venture.
Yep.
So how have you been able to find the right people that are able to then continue to execute on the original vision of the concept?
Well, I mean, listen, you can have all the concepts and all the locations and all the great stuff in the world, but if you don't have good people, it doesn't work. You know, I have an operating partner, Todd Rushing, we've been together over 25 years. He worked with me back in the mix in peasant days. He's been with me with every company I've had. And so that continuity from that standpoint, I have another whole group. My director of training has been with me 14 years. My director of administration has been with me 14 years. So I've got long-term people. And we really don't run it as a tight-knit corporate. We really try to hire great GMs, great chefs, and give them autonomy. We're sort of like the bumper guards. And then on top of that, I have all my family working for me now, too. My son is the general manager of the Spence. My daughter is the director of marketing. My daughter-in-law is our national publicist. My wife does flowers still in the restaurants and events. We've got a lot of things going on. And the other thing is, you know, I live in Midtown. I can go to every one of my restaurants every night without any problem.
Yeah.
It's an easy loop, an easy swing. And so I'm either in Midtown or I'm on an airplane somewhere, one of the two.
I'm sure it helps to live in the in-town area, too, just because you're sort of seeing what spaces are available and seeing who's around and where they're going.
What's my neighborhood?
Yeah.
You know, it's I've lived in Midtown, you know, since the mid-70s. And I've watched Midtown grow and develop
and
to
change,
the live, work, play area of town.
Yeah.
And it's been fun. It's fun to be a part of. It's fun to, you know, I remember when you couldn't walk through Piedmont Park without tripping on needles and bullets. So, I mean, it's come a long way. And now you drive by Piedmont Park and you see all those people, and it's a thriving area town, and it supports the restaurant scene, and we support it. And, you know, I can walk to Symphony Hall, I can walk to theater, I can walk to some of my restaurants. It's nice. It's not big city, but for Atlanta, it's as big city as it gets.
Yeah.
Right. It's a comfortable size city and a fun urban environment. Absolutely. So, Bob, what's on the horizon? Any insider tips or?
I'm not finished yet. My wife keeps telling me that I need to retire, but I still have some years left in me.
I can tell that, you know, the passion is, sort of this, you know, bottomless fire that burns all the time. And you're always looking at, you know, the next thing. So
we've got three restaurants under construction in St. Louis right now. We've taken an old historical building from the 30s that's 35,000 square feet and have put three different restaurant concepts in it. And the first one's going to open probably in mid-October. I've got a new restaurant project in Orlando that I'm working on. In fact, I'm flying to Orlando after we leave.
What drew you to St. Louis?
So actually, you know, I the hotel I did, the Witt Hotel in Chicago, was a Hilton property, and I designed and developed all the restaurants in that, and we did a rooftop bar there called Roof. That if you read the New York Times last week, they did a story on being single in Chicago. Well, the cover picture of that article was the rooftop that we did there, and
nice.
we sort of got known for the only rooftop I'd ever done.
Yeah,
but the people that own some hotels in St. Louis, LHM, called me and said, "Are you the guy that did the rooftop in Chicago? We'd like to do one." And so I took the Hilton Hotel in St. Louis, which is 27 stories, old building, scraped the roof, built a brand new two-story building on top of their building.
Oh my gosh!
It overlooks Busch Stadium and overlooks the Arch. And it's gotten between those two restaurants, the two, one in Chicago and the one in St. Louis, we've done probably the two top rooftop bars in the U.S.
Wow.
And so they've done some other hotels, and so we're doing a partnership with this. It's called The Cheshire. Actually, they filmed, what was the movie, Up with George Clooney?
Oh,
they
yeah.
filmed the wedding scene in this basement of this building that's been abandoned for a while.
Ah.
So it's sort of a labor of love historical building. Having some fun with it, getting to do some new concepts in there. And so I'm doing that. And, you know, I'm in Florida because I have a partnership with Brian Francis, the CEO of NASCAR.
Wow.
And we did two restaurants together there. And so I have some fun clients.
Yeah.
And people that we work with that allow me to do what I want to do. And it's a great partnership.
How about, are you going to be doing any rooftop bars in Atlanta?
We actually are working on one.
Very, very
top secret.
Can't
even tell you where it is, but
which means we're gonna have to have you back.
We've been wanting to do it. It's probably a 2014 opening.
All right, well,
but
we'll have you back.
It's going to be very, very cool.
I'm very much looking forward to that now.
So, do you find that getting to travel to other cities and see what they're doing allows you to like even get more creative ideas? Or
yeah,
kind of
it does when you go to bigger. When you go to bigger, so, you know, when you go to Chicago,
you're not
picking
up a ton
New York,
from St. Louis.
But it's tough. No, I just did a restaurant in February in Montgomery, Alabama.
Oh yeah,
and that was probably I had never been to Montgomery ever in my life, and it's almost like a suburb of Atlanta.
Yeah,
but we did a restaurant down there called Central in an old cotton warehouse. That's it's an incredible, beautiful space, and doing very, very, very well. So you never know.
Yeah,
you know, there's some thirsty towns out there that are looking for new
right, innovative food.
And also in this day and age, right? I mean, there are so many people who, you know, it's not like it used to be. Everybody's not from where they are now.
Exactly.
You know, people moving all over the place for whatever jobs they can get, for colleges, for all that stuff. So I'm sure there are, I know you love this word, foodies in all of those places. But, you know, at the very least, people interested in a good food experience.
You know? Everybody in every town, people travel.
Yeah.
And they go see things and they come back and go, why don't we have it here?
Yeah.
Or why can't we have it here?
Yeah.
So the question is, are there enough of them
right.
to support
it.
Whatever it is you're going to do?
Absolutely.
And that's the challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. As I think I've told the story before, but I had traveled to the Midwest for a job I had a couple of years ago regularly to Indiana somewhere. Horrible. And oh my God, the restaurants were horrible. And I don't think there were enough people there to actually support a decent restaurant. I'm not even going to – really. They took me to their best restaurant. It was horrible. Horrible. I can't even get over it. And this was like 4 years ago, and I'm still not over that.
And they thought it was great.
They thought it was great. Yeah. They were like, you got to try this. And I was this close to just having to push my plate away and not even eat my food because it was that bad.
I've done that a few times with clients where people take me to think the best restaurant in town is. And so I have to get them to come to a bigger city and take them to good restaurants to show that they really don't know what they're talking about sometimes.
Yeah. Though I also have to say, and I'm not going to name names because I don't want to call anybody out, but I went to what is supposed to be one of the really good restaurants in town here in Atlanta recently. Beautiful decor, cool place, and I thought it was just okay. Really. I mean,
so even when you position yourself as high-end premium, you still have to make sure you're doing all the work to really wow people.
You got to deliver.
And, I wouldn't
go
back.
You know, you got to have a strong kitchen, strong culinary team.
Yeah, and there were some weird mistakes made. And again, I won't name names. This way I can tell you what actually happened. But it was a steak place, and we all ordered steaks. And I had a filet, and I ordered it medium rare. And they brought all the steaks to the table with pot holders, and these plates are so hot, don't touch them. So obviously my steak wasn't medium rare because it was still cooking on the plate. And by the time I got to the center, it might have been well done. It tasted good, but was not what I ordered. That's a problem.
Yeah, that's an execution problem. Simple.
Yeah. Staff was great. I mean, the servers were all really pleasant, really good, even though they walked past the table and hit me in the head with a pitcher of water.
Ouch.
Yeah. And then they all thought they were going to get sued or whatever. But I have a hard head, so I was like, no, I'm fine. It's all good. But anyway, I won't go back. I mean, you know, if someone dragged me there, I would go. But, yeah, meh.
I mean, look, there's lots of, you know, we tell everybody all the time is there's lots of choices.
Right.
And where to go and where you spend your money.
Right.
You know, you want to give people a reason to come to you.
Yep.
And not go to you. And so that's the challenge. And you have to adapt and adjust and deliver. Nobody's perfect. There are always going to be mistakes.
Absolutely.
You're dealing with a volatile product.
Of course.
And you're dealing with human beings. And the combination of the two means that it's not going to be 100% all the time. And, you know, and that's where hospitality and some of the other things come in, because you can make up for mistakes sometimes.
Yep.
With, you know, we tell everybody, if you can't be good, be nice.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
Because you can't replace, you can't teach nice.
Yeah.
And you can't replace nice.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah, we've said before, we've talked about this many times on the show, it's not that you make a mistake, it's how you handle it. Because
exactly. We'll
often talk about the places that we had the worst experience, if they handled it well or poorly. We'll talk about both of those things more than when we didn't have it. When everything went smoothly and it was great, you just take it for granted. But when something went wrong and they screwed you even worse, forget it. You'll talk about it all day long.
You'll be tweeting when you get home or in the car.
Immediately. I'm all about that. And if you, you know, if you have a bad experience, something happens and they fix it and they go over and above and they are really nice and really hospitable, then you'll be tweeting all that positive stuff.
And we teach all of our managers that if the problem gets to you, you should never be the problem.
Yeah.
In other words, time to get, you know,
point,
I can understand an employee or
somebody
like that, but you're the resolution, you know? And so if you don't handle it and you become the problem, you got bigger issues.
Yeah. Yeah, you won't be working for Concentrix too much longer.
Well, Concentrix has a number of really awesome concepts. We want to make sure everybody knows where to find information about all of the restaurants. And I also wanted to give a brief shout out to Brandy Ramsey, who's the GM over at
TAP.
Mm-hmm. She's the one who actually ended up getting Bob to come on the show. We stopped by there. We were putting out all those flyers for the fundraiser at the aquarium, and they're big supporters of everything Atlanta. So thanks, Brandy, again. And Bob, where is the best way for people to get information about menus and restaurants, make reservations, etc.?
ConcentrixRestaurants.com. It's pretty simple.
It's a great website. Easy to navigate.
And it has, you know, all of our Atlanta restaurants, but it also has all of our projects and things we have going on.
So also if they were interested in the consulting angle as well, because it sounds like there's a lot of increased demand. I mean, that's a really booming part of the business as well.
The phone rings. It does.
I bet.
I like it.
I feel really honored that we had you in here, Bob.
Oh, it's fun.
You're like a big restaurant star.
No, I don't know about that.
I love it.
An aging star.
Whatever, we'll take it.
And continuing to raise the bar.
This is radio,
here
Bob.
In Atlanta,
no one knows.
So I'm 22.
That's right. Me too. That's awesome.
There you go. Well, thank you all for joining us for Southern Hospitality here on Business Radio X. We've been talking with Bob Amick with Concentrix Restaurants. I'm Elizabeth Gordon.
And I'm Dana Barrett. And we will see you next week.